Everybody, I'm Pete. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Grateful to be alive and sober and at a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. Very grateful for a gift of sobriety and a journey to a place called recovered by a loving God that I found in Alcoholics Anonymous. I thank the group and Chris for having me here over the last few weeks, and God willing, the next few weeks to continue this journey with this big book, which has given my life a spectacular upheaval from where I was in 1988. That's when God separated me in his infinite mercy from alcohol. And God willing, for the last time, June 23rd, 1988, and I've been separated since. And in that place of being separated, I was put in Alcoholics Anonymous shortly afterwards. Had made several attempts at this, trying to hang in there, trying to put the plug in the jug, trying to make meeting after meeting, and I would always get drunk. I tried quitting, I tried stopping, and always got drunk. I don't think I had conceded fully to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. There were always reservations, and then something changed in 1988 where I knew it was made abundantly clear to me by a loving God that it was over. And the next drink, I was either going to die because it was going to take me on another drunk or get help. And in that place of desperation, I was certainly not thinking about doing a workshop or even coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. It was, Father, if you're out there, take me from this. And 16 years later, I'm graced with something called recovered. Based on some of the things I've experienced in Alcoholics Anonymous, some of the joys and some of the heartaches, based on my track record, you ought to have somebody else doing this workshop tonight. But God has kept me separated and has put people in my path who have given me some instructions. And I still seek this with the desperation of a drowning man like I got here in 1988 to continue to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And I will tell you, I feel blessed with that, because even with hitting a wall with about 14 years sober, I didn't quit. I continue to seek. And many times I felt like the well was dry and my meditations were dry and I was going really nowhere, and I just continue to plow the field, and God does the growing. And so I'm really blessed. I feel very blessed to be a part of this. And thank you for being there for me. Thus far, we've talked about our first 9 steps, and I'd really like to talk a lot more about amends tonight. You know what I have found over the years of doing this deal? It's really important that we're with people who are on this path. We need to visit sordid spots in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's where we go carry this message. Otherwise, we're always preaching to the choir. But the great thing about being around people who are on this path, when we talk about amends, things kick up that we're not aware of. I had something, we're going to a meeting, I was in Staten Island going into Brooklyn for a meeting, and we start talking about amends, and out of that conversation came 2 amends that I was totally unaware of. And that was one to a public library. When I was a kid, I took books out of a public library and never brought them back. And I remember going back to the library and having to make amends and walked in there, and I said, I was here about, 35 years ago to borrow books, and a lady was looking to call 911 on me. And I said, any kind of way I can make amends? She said, we didn't even have computers with you on. I can make a donation. And anyway, I put that money back into the universe in charities. And there was a liquor store that the guy would not serve me liquor on the Lower East Side. He just wouldn't let me in the store. And I picked up a garbage pail and threw it against his window. They didn't break, but I caused his family who lived in the back with him harm. And I had to go back there and try to make right the wrong they caused. So we talk about amends, and things kick up. When I'm doing this work, it would be really narrow-minded of me to think, well, here's my list, and that's all I need to do, and I'm done. Because as I continue to wake up, things will resurface. And a great prayer to work with is going to God and ask him to make me aware of any amends that I'm currently not aware of. One of the things we want to consider is, how free do we want to be? I asked that when we first started here. If you're experiencing freedom now, do you want to get freer? And the great thing about amends is it will get you freer. It will get you free. There will be great change that gets involved. Tremendous change we go through, going through the archway. Tremendous change that goes on with 6 and 7. And it happens in 9. going back and making financial restitution, just visiting with people over the phone, writing letters, however God instructs us to go make these amends. Great change and great freedom. How free do we want to be? Am I still willing to go to any lengths? They ask about any lengths. They talk about any lengths in how it works. And between steps 8 and 9, they hit us twice with any lengths. Because it's real easy here to make a handful of amends and rest on our laurels. Because we start to feel good at making some amends. And we start to worship our emotions of feeling good rather than this power which is keeping me sober all along. I think the first time we sat, I asked how many of us think, you know, we've entered the world of the spirit. And if you have you cleaned up all your amends that you're consciously aware of right now? Because if you haven't, maybe had a spiritual experience as a result of steps 9.5. And have you really entered the world of the spirit? And if we're not out there making amends that we're aware of right now, I know, for example, I have 10 amends that I should be, instead of being here tonight, I should be ringing a doorbell or making a phone call, setting up an appointment, but my ego has reemerged and it says, well, you know what, maybe I can do this next week. They don't even remember me. Besides, I feel pretty good. And I start to worship my emotions and I get stuck on the second half of the first step. My life was unmanageable, now it's manageable, and I use that to determine my recovery, if you will. So the question to consider is any lens now on my terms if I'm doing that sort of deal and not what the sponsor has given me, which was given to him by God? And have I become the power? Do I have first step reservations? Because when I got here, any lens was any lens. Sponsor, you tell me what to do, I'll do it. And then we, you know, go through this work. We experience some ease and comfort. We start to feel good because I cleaned up some amends and I run to a meeting and say, hey, I just did another amends. Ain't I doing great? I'm the poster boy for AA. Ego says, you can relax now. You're going too fast. Whatever it'll tell you, and we start to even experience some resistance to amends that we were looking to make before we wrote the list or when we first wrote the list. Now I'm going to hit all of these people, and we hit 5, and we start to kick back. So have I become the power? Now I think I'm in charge of my recovery. I don't really need to go to any lengths. And I share that because I've heard it many times. I've experienced reemergence of ego in Alcoholics Anonymous. Not in my 9th step, but I've experienced it somewhere in 10, 11, and 12. We don't have enough time in this 1 hour to even talk about the importance of cleaning up the wreckage of my past. Contemporary A will tell you, well, I've harmed more people, I've annoyed more people than I harm. I wish I had a dollar for every time I heard that. And my thing I always sat with, well, why don't we go ask the people you think you annoyed if you annoyed them or you harmed them? You with me? The other lessons I've learned in doing amends is this. Is it possible that by me making amends and getting free, that I can clean up other areas of my life that I didn't plan on when I went to make amends? I make amends over here, and I keep making those amends, and suddenly another area of my life starts to clean up, starts to clear up. I start to have different perceptions. There's a shift in perception for the amends that I'm making in other areas of my life that were troubling me. Case in point. I go out and make financial restitution to institutions. And I find that my money situation starts to improve. Just my money, what was in my pocket, what was in my account, got a job. Going out making financial restitution, putting things back into the universe which I stole, and suddenly other areas of my life start to clean up. Going out and make amends in this area, I find my relationships start to improve with other people. I can look the world in the eye. Those fifth-step promises started to materialize for me in 9. We just don't know what's going to happen with this power, the change that happens. Some of us start to balk. We hit a few amends and then we start to kick back and say, we don't need to do this. Or I'm really fearful about going to this person. okay, fine. I had that. I had to post the man we hated, Will Arise, showed up for me, and it showed up where I still am angry with this guy. What was fueling it was fear. And I need to turn back to this power and write more inventory. And what I have found is this, that God will walk with me through all of that stuff. A vision for you is a vision for me. It isn't something that I have to kick back and say, well, I'm going to see what God's got for me. No, God's with me, and I go do what God tells me to do. I seek counsel with this work, and then I go make my amends. God will walk me through that stuff. My ego would tell me maybe we shouldn't go do it. Maybe I should kick back and wait. How could I be present to this moment and awake if I'm still listening to voices from the past? How can I hear the voice present now, that subtle, quiet voice that God talks to me with, when I'm still hearing the screaming from my past, voices from my past? How can I really say I'm free? How can I say, walk into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and say, my name is Pete Marinelli and I'm awake. I've had an experience as a result of the 12 steps when I'm still plagued by yesterday. Many times what I would do until those amends were cleared up was this. I would judge you on what you did and said by someone in the past. My past was still keeping me in bondage. It had to. I was not yet free. Instead of balking, what I have found out is this, that spiritual warriors go through pain and embrace change. That's what we do. When we start to have some experience with this power, do I think God for one moment is going to drop me in the middle of my ninth step? Of course not. Take me to it and through it. Spiritual warriors go through pain, embrace change. That's what we do. And then we come on the other side and we pass that on to prospects. And we walk them through. Many times I would get attached to the end result of something. What my journey should look like. What my any length should look like. What this change is going to look like. How God's going to mold me. Over and over and over again. And all I'm responsible for is showing up with a spirit of willingness, and if I'm really had an experience at one, I will. And I suit up and show up. And God walks me through that stuff. Heard someone say something very profound for me, as simple as it was. A farmer does the plowing, God does the growing. A doctor performs surgery, and God does the healing. I show up to this work with a spirit of willingness, pen in hand, with a piece of paper, and ready to go out and make amends. And God will take me through that, and God will do the changing and the growing for me. It's done for me. Why would He deny me freedom from bondage? Not a merciful God won't do that. He won't. Great things happen in nine. Rather than paying attention to becoming, I'm awake now and pay attention to what is right now, being present. And this power will flow into all that I do. Push away. Ego has me push away from the current moment. Ego has push me away from now because I need to go into later on what this is going to look like. Well, it's probably going to look like what the old stuff looked like, so now I'm back in the past. Instead of pushing now away, be with it present. And this power, this presence will walk with me in everything I do. Including amends, because it's that important. You want to get a silence out of a room, and you're doing a meeting, and they say, okay, it's a topic meeting. Talk about unfinished amends. It'd be you and a chairperson left, maybe it's a meeting. Yeah. Unfinished amends. How many of us have that stuff? Now, I'll tell you this. Lots of times, there's people on my list we can't locate. And it comes down to this, the spirit of willingness. Am I willing to go see these people if they were put in my path? If I can reach them, will I go make amends? Am I willing to go make amends even to the people that I can't because I'll cause more harm? It's about the spirit of willingness. Am I willing to go do this? That is different than, I'm not doing this. I don't want to. Ego won't allow me to see truth and say, I'm resting on my laurels. Ego's taken over. I'm just too lazy. I feel good. It won't give me that. It'll give me a million other excuses. Making amends, making amends. Okay. In step 8, in my glasses because I can't see. Over on page 76, in step 8, it says, about one, two, three sentences from the third paragraph. It says, if we haven't the will to do this, and it's talking about amends, we ask until it comes, and that is a prayer. I turn to this power for the spirit of willingness to go out and make amends. I turn to this power for the willingness to continue to go to any lengths. I still work with that prayer. Willingness. Spiritual experience begins with a mustard seed of willingness. It's at the beginning and it's current now. Willingness. Bottom of page 76, it says, probably there are still some misgivings. As we look back over the list of business acquaintances and friends we have hurt, we may feel different about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. And we talked a little bit about this last week. And many times I didn't show up with amends, what our book talks about leading with the chin, just announcing, my religious convictions, or I'm living a spiritual path. I let God determine my approach to each and every person. I have an idea what I'm going to show up with, but God will determine the words I speak to them. Because most of these people that I have hit were more important in my demonstration of what I'm talking about than any words I can give them. They were interested in how I was living, most of them. What was going on in my life. Not just, hey, I'm sorry, and then take off. I talked about last week some of the things I've done with people, and that was when I sit down and make an approach to someone, it wasn't, here's your $20, have a nice life. My job was to suit up and show up, make financial restitution. If I couldn't make the whole package, I would arrange the best deal possible according to them. I need to have the timing in God's time, not mine, because God's timing was always perfect. I had some amends. I would show up to people, and I remember wanting to go to them for months, and something said, not yet, not yet, not yet. And then suddenly something said, go. And the timing was always perfect, because it's on God's calendar. And I would clean up the wreckage of my past with these people and not dragging them through the mud either, being really careful, but clear on the wrongs I've caused. And then one question I've always asked them, anything you need to tell me? And my job was to sit and listen and not say, yeah, but, or, if you did this, I would have done that. I sit and listen. These things aren't comfortable. Spiritual warriors go through pain and embrace change. And I sit there and I listen. And I usually ask them, anything I can do to make this right? And if you can't think of anything now, if you do, I'm willing to do it. And little by slowly, I'm able to put closure on my past. Closure on my past. It's really important. If I stole a jacket, I show up with a new jacket or the money for a jacket, and I don't steal anymore. The great thing about amends, what it does is it starts to eliminate old behavior. It starts to dump belief systems too in going through this work. As we clean up the past, step 10 says we've entered the world of the spirit. Great things are happening for us. There's been a shift in consciousness. There's been a shift in perception. A whole lot of things have been happening. What I need to hold on to as I'm going through this is that this is God's deal. Way back in Doctor's Opinion, it talked about recreating our life. In step 3, it talked about being reborn. This is it. This is the proof of it, what we're doing and what we're about to experience when we hit 10 and we start the disciplines with 11. My job, my big book tells me on page 77, is to fit myself. This is where I fit. This is where God has put me, to be of maximum service to Him and the people about us. It isn't about going and do this so I become like an AA, guru or something. This is about doing God's deal. Back in the seven-step prayer, we ask God for strength to go out from here to do His bidding, that we go to Him for good and bad, to be of service to Him and those around us. This is what we do. I just want to skip over to page 83 for a moment. We'll go back. But over on page 83, it's a great lesson here. About six sentences down, it says, their defects may be glaring, but the chances are our own actions are partly responsible. This morning I'm talking to a guy I'm sponsoring, and he went to make amends with his mom, and I was really clear with him about instructions. And he told me how the conversation went. And what he started to do was debate with her. the time you said this to me, Mom, and the time you said that to me, Mom, and he went on and on and on. And now you have to go make amends for the amends you made. That's not what we do. Their defects may be glaring, but our book says maybe our own actions are partly responsible. So we go back. Some of us have families, you know, it's like visiting a sordid spot. We need to suit up and show up with the Spirit of God and go clean up the wreckage of our past and sit and listen and remember that some of the ways they are because of us. Family afterwards says, years of living with an alcoholic will make any wife or child neurotic, the whole family is to some extent ill. Could you imagine, like I thought about, what if I had to grow up with me? I'm sure I wouldn't be firing on all cylinders. One of the things I've experienced, I can't tell you how many times, as recently as like a year ago, start working with someone, and after about 3 or 4 weeks, they tell me, my wife or my girlfriend has to go to Al-Anon. We just had a big argument about this. And I said, well, what happens? I told her, you need to go to Al-Anon. You're sick. I'm going to AA. You need to go to Al-Anon. And they, with arrogance, that family members need to go seek help. And they get really disturbed when they don't, if the wife or girlfriend or family doesn't want to go to Al-Anon or go seek help somewhere. And I immediately, I don't care if they're sober 20 minutes, I bring them to that their defects may be glaring, but aren't your actions partly responsible for their behavior today? It isn't your job now to wake up and take this message back into the home, and then one day, in God's time, sit down and make amends for the harms we've caused. And they get disturbed, and sometimes I lose guys with that. But it's really important to understand what we're doing and seek experiences with this power. Okay. Bottom of page 77, talked about this last week also. It says, way on the bottom, it says, we are there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so. And that goes back to what I talked about when we opened up here, that if I clean up amends in one area, sometimes other areas of my life clean up also. Nothing worthwhile can be accomplished in my life until I do this work. And I don't know exactly what's going to clear up besides this amends, but it will be revealed to me as I move along. It tells me in that same paragraph, his faults or her faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the result. Great promise. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Next paragraph tells me most alcoholics owe money. We do not dodge our creditors. Many times I wanted to. I got to be honest. Many times I wanted to dodge my creditor. I did not want to deal with it. But who's really in the sunlight of the Spirit then? And who's really trusting and relying upon this power if I'm suiting up and showing up? And what I would do is arrange the best deal possible in recovery, not only when I first got here and approached this work for the first time. In recovery, I've had to arrange the best deal possible with creditors and little by slowly make arrangements to pay them back. And when I got off the phone with them, I was still standing and still sober, and the sky didn't, you know, collapse, and the earth didn't open up and swallow me. Going into that, I kind of felt that way a few times. It's just telling them what we're trying to do. We make no bones about our drinking. They usually know it anyway, whether we think so or not. It says in the next sentence, approaching this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise us. Arranging the best deal we can, we let these people know we are sorry. Our drinking has made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors no matter how far we have to go. Here's a clear warning. If we're liable to drink, if we are afraid to face them. And I experience incredible financial difficulties in Alcoholics Anonymous sober. I've experienced it a couple of times. Currently, little by slowly moving out of one. And I've had to deal with creditors several times. My ego told me, you know what, you're sober this many years. First of all, you should not be experiencing anything like this, and you definitely don't have to deal with a creditor, right? And then I remembered this passage in my big book, and after much counsel with my sponsor, I had to make the best deal I could, and that's what I'm currently doing. And I tell you, it's freed me up in other areas of my life. It had to. Page 79. It says, although, first paragraph, although these reparations take innumerable forms, there are some general guiding, general principles which we find guiding. And here's the any lens. Reminding myself that I have decided to go to any length to find a spiritual experience, and here's a prayer. I turn to my Heavenly Father and ask for strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences might be. I may lose my position, I may lose reputation, or face jail, but I am willing. And this is what I was talking about earlier, that spirit of willingness when we show up. Do I have a spirit of willingness or not? It says we have to be, we must not shrink at anything. Usually, however, other people are involved. Therefore, we were not to be the hasty and foolish martyr who would needlessly sacrifice others to save himself from the alcoholic pit. Last week I talked about my 23 years working as a longshoreman on the Brooklyn waterfront. A lot of rough characters down there. And I did a lot of illegal things to get money for the price of a drink, along with other people. Now, I would want to go back to my employer and say, this is what I did, but I may bring a lot of other people into that. And I had no right to do that. I would have to get their consent first before I showed up to my employer and said, hey, listen, this is what I did. And they weren't about to give consent. In no way were they about to give consent. What do I do with stuff like that where I have financial restitution to make, but if I show up and tell the person why I'm there and implicate others, what do I do? Well, this is what I did on many amends that involved money. It was about what I took out of the universe, I put back into the universe in the form of charities. Also, for being such a horrible worker, my job was now to work and be a servant of God in that affair. Show up to work on time and leave when my boss says go home. Take 1 hour for lunch, not 3 days. No. Thank the good Lord I was showing up sober and going home sober. There were times when I worked on a waterfront, I'd show up in the morning hungover as hell, but you know by like 10, 11 o'clock in the morning, once I hustled up some bucks, I was going just a few blocks away and getting a pint and starting the day. I never leave work sober. But that was a thing of the past. I was showing up sober. So it was about, now I had to be a good worker. I start to get a reputation as being a good worker on my job, where people didn't even want to give me the right time of day. And now I was regarded as a good worker. What a good deal. When I make amends, I don't not only give people the respect that they're owed because I rip them off, but something happens within. So here I am being a good worker and making financial restitution where I could, and another area of my life was changed is how I was seeing me, how I was feeling about myself. Page 80. Two paragraphs from the bottom, about three sentences down. It tells me what I do. It says that I have to place the outcome in God's hands. And I take that into my amends. Am I trusting and relying upon my Heavenly Father for this, or am I trusting and relying upon me? And the barometer is, I'm usually experiencing a whole lot of fear and not going to make the amends. Okay, let's go over to page 82. Second paragraph, second sentence, it says sometimes, where it starts there, it says sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs or she needs to do is to keep sober. And we'll hear that at many meetings. Well, I'm sober today and that's my amends to the world. Certainly we must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But we are a long way from making good to the wife or parents for whom years we have so shockingly treated. Passing all understanding is the patience mothers and wives have had with alcoholics. Had this not been, so many of us would have no homes today, perhaps be dead. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring through the lives of others. Hearts are broken, sweet relationships are dead, affection have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have left the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says sobriety is enough. I don't think our book could get any clearer than that. Page 83 at the top says, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. We, not them, must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. Amends is about repairing what I have done, making an attempt to repair the damage I have caused. It says we ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being very careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring, but chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. So what do? We clean house with the family. Here's our prayer, asking each morning in meditation that our God, our Creator, shows the way of patience, tolerance, kindness, and love. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. It's a way of living. We develop a manner of living. This is what we do. A great practice I work with all of this work, and being we're talking about amends, I apply it here currently. Instead of working with, I have to go do this, the mantra I work with is, I get to go do this. I get to do this work. I get to go make amends. I get to sit in prayer and meditation. I get to go do this. This is an opportunity God has given me to go do. I get to do it. Rather than a chore, an opportunity. It's interesting, in page 83 we have our ninth step promises, and we go to meetings and all we, you know, let's talk about the promises, and it's page 83 and 84 and the ninth step promises. But yet you bring up a topic, let's talk about the third step promises, let's talk about the fourth step promises or fifth step promises, let's talk about some of that stuff. There's silence in the room. It's sad, but it's true. So we have our, you know, our ninth step promises, which we'll read, and we've all heard them. Have I experienced any of that stuff? Have I really seen that my ninth step promises are evidence of the great fact on page 25? And if we really look at them, they're pretty much the opposites of the bedevilments they talked about on page 52, aren't they? Well, what a great shift that experience is happening when I take a look at that stuff. They talked about a great fact on page 25, and here I am in step 9, and it's proving itself through my own experience. I'm living this stuff. It's being done for me. And remember examining the bedevilments, the current unmanageability on page 52. I don't live like that anymore. I'm not in the grip of my bedevilments anymore. And what a great shift has happened for me, done for me by this power. But what's failed to be talked about in AA meetings is the promises throughout this book, or the warnings and the conditions throughout this book, the spiritual laws of this universe. There were some amends I wanted to talk about because I think it's so... I know when I'm sitting on that side and I'm attending a workshop, or when my sponsor's talking to me on the phone, mechanics are just really important. But I want to hear about experiences from people who have gone out and knocked on doors. My sponsor has told me, and another teacher in my life has told me, you know how you work in step 3, you put pen to paper in step 4. You know how you do in step 9, you hear that. And that's you knocking on someone's door saying, I need to sit and talk to you about, and I need to clean up some amends. We take action, we take the bit in our teeth, and we go. I've had to make some amends where I really sat back and said, you know what, this is like any Lent and maybe my sponsor needs to go through the work again. I'm going through the work for the second time and like the first time a woman's name shows up on a list, an old friend, and there was some really indiscretions on my part. And I didn't treat this woman very nicely. And the first time through this work, I had information given to me like, leave it alone, do not go there. And here I am going through the work again, and this person's name shows up again, and now the pain was great. The pain of not changing was greater than going through the change. And my spirit was moving me through this. But I had to seek counsel. Now I'm working with a new sponsor and a couple of the new teachers in my life. They said, oh no, you need to go see this woman, but you need to sit in prayer first. And I couldn't deny what my spirit was giving me. Can't deny my spirit. How do I get in touch with this person? So I start researching old phone books, old literature. Numbers got to be somewhere. And around the third phone book, I find this woman's number. I make prayer. I'm clear on what I'm going to do, and I make a phone call. And there was no answer the first time. I called back. I usually do about 3 phone calls. The second phone call, she picked up. I said who I was. She knew before I even got into it who I was. I mean, she knew. And she wasn't too thrilled about hearing from me. And I made amends. I tried to make an amends over the phone. And I got to the part, was anything I can do? And she said, yeah, I need some money. And so I arranged the best deal I could, and so I did. And she told me where she was living, and I asked if I could not go up to her apartment, if I could meet her in a neutral place. And she did, and it was a really sordid spot in Brooklyn. And I drove up to this spot in Brooklyn, and she was outside with a pit bull waiting for me. And so I made a prayer, and I said, Father, please, direct me here, direct my words. Move me through this. And I showed up with the money she requested, and sadly, this woman did not look healthy. I think she was in a grip of the grapes and in really bad shape. And again, I made my approach to her and asked, is there anything you need to tell me? What can I do to make this right? And she just pretty much wanted to get money from me. And in a very, very delicate way, I shared with her about places to go to take care of this thing she was experiencing, this addiction that was all over her. And I got back in my car, and I remember my shoulders felt lighter and I was freer. I really did the best I could with this. I shared, I think it was last week, that I do not demonstrate that type of behavior anymore. I don't. I invite you into my life and see how I live, how God allows me to live, and my words will be that much more credible. I invite you into my life. But I had to clear this up. And I got back into my car, and I thanked my Heavenly Father for allowing me to do that. And I made a prayer for this woman, and I drove away. And as I said, it was in a sordid spot in Brooklyn. And as I drove away, it came up to the light, and out of the projects appeared a cop car. I didn't really think much about it, but I remember throwing my seatbelt over me really quick because I'm a law-abiding citizen today. So I make a left at the light, and they made a left. And I got to the next light, made a turn, and then they made a turn, and those lights went on. And I figured, well, I didn't want a light. I'm not speeding. I'm sober. What do they want? And they got out of the car, and I had, by the way, just finished speaking at a meeting in downtown Brooklyn. And I go see this woman. And I'm living in Staten Island at the time, and I'm doing this deal in Brooklyn. And the cop pulls me over, he asks me for my license and registration, and before I could say anything, he says, what are you doing down here? And who is that person we saw you give her money? And so I said, okay, God, what do I do? Well, let's tell him the truth. And I says, well, officer, I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm down here trying to make amends for palms in a... He said, get out of the car. He did. And so I show him my license, and he says, hold it. You just came from Sunset Park, Brooklyn. You're in Sheepshead Bay, Brooklyn, and you live in Staten Island. And then he let me have it. Like, what kind of game was I trying to run on him? And what he did was, at this point, he asked me to get out of the car, and he started to frisk me. And he said, I know you're down here to buy drugs. What kind of, are you an alcoholic? And don't lie to me. It got really ugly. And he rolled up my pants legs. He said, let me look for track marks. And he was frisking me. And the other guy was going through my car. And he said, if I find anything, you're going to jail tonight. And they were using some really, really ugly language. What turns the corner is one of those unmarked vans. And they're radioing to the van. And I'm going, oh, God, I'm going to jail tonight for something I didn't do. And I'm trying to explain to him what I was here for. And I look up and I say, God, you know why I was here. I know I was here, and I'm really in your hands. And then I had a few choice words from my sponsor who suggested I go do this, you know. So I thought they were going to do the old handcuff routine and take me away, and I had to prove my innocence. And then there's a crowd gathering on the corner, and here I am. Anyway, one of the cops, I'm explaining to him, and he pulls me aside. Now, where this happened, there's 3 meetings I would attend regularly, and I've sponsored guys on the job. And I told the cop, I said, you know, I come down here for 8 meetings. I sponsored some of you guys on the job. And this is really what I'm about to do. Oh, yeah, when I got out of the car, my AA coin fell out. And I said, look, I'm really an AA, you know. He pulls me aside and he says to me, is this that amends thing you're talking about? thank you, God. I says, yeah, exactly. That's what I'm here for. And he told me, listen, it's my sergeant. Just stay here and shut up. Let him do what he has to do. Be quiet. And so I got real quiet. And the sergeant came back and he, you know, said a few things to me. I never want to see your neighborhood again. And I thanked them for their time. I tried to shake hands and I got back in my car and I drove away. And I will tell you, it scared the hell out of me. But it was back to what I was talking about earlier. I had to go do this. And on my way home, I remember thinking how truly grateful I was. This was as clear as can be, that I was sober and I really had nothing to hide. Because when the cops used to stop me, I would start to stutter because I had a million things going on at once. And if they found out any of them, I was going away that night. But there was nothing to hide. What great freedom. What great freedom. And I share that story because it was a difficult one that some of us come across. Like, I really don't want to go do this. But God takes me to it and through it. And spiritual warriors embrace the change and go through the pain. It wasn't so painful. It was disturbing. I got on the other side and I was free. And just a footnote to the story, I kept that woman in my prayers for a while. And I don't know where she is anymore. But I did do that. And that's why when women come to me nowadays and ask for help in Alcoholics Anonymous, I direct them to women who are doing this deal. That's what I do. Stay out of very awkward situations that way. I had to revisit my brothers the second time going through this work. First time I made amends, like a lot of my amends for the obvious things. Stole, ripped people off emotionally. Some fights I've gotten into, the obvious things we experienced going through the men's the first time. But my brother showed up on the list again, my two younger brothers. And it had to do specifically with abandonment. That still troubled me. And I felt it still troubled them, and I made appointments with both of them. And my youngest brother, I remember sitting with him and talking about this, and I remember him, this big strappy kid, coming to tears and holding on to me. And giving me some pretty neat words about how I live my life today. And he talked a little bit about what he experienced, that abandonment. My family moved from Brooklyn to Staten Island, and I was the oldest brother, and I left my two kid brothers to fend for themselves, so to speak. My other brother had some more words for me. And he said, we knew you were sick. We were just waiting for the phone call that you were dead. And none of us slept at night. Dad never slept, and we never slept. Any time the phone would ring at around 11 or 12 o'clock at night, we just knew it was the cops or the ambulance or the hospital, and it was for you. And when it wasn't, we all kind of breathed a sigh of relief. But we were waiting, and that was torment for us to live like that, to see one of our family members go off the cliff. And then he thanked me for what I do now and how I live. I was free of that. My job is to take these principles into that affair, too, and I'm always there for my brothers. God has allowed me to live differently. Someone asked a great question last week. He's sitting somewhere on that side. I saw him earlier. What about people that you didn't directly harm, but you had resentments for them, and you assassinated their character in the thinking mind? Oh, here comes that guy again, and you know, or that woman, and I assassinate their character, size them up and chop them down. Don't tell anyone, but I've done that. What do I do with stuff like that? Isn't that about putting harmful energy into the universe towards that person? I had lots of those. First time through, well, my instructions were now to go offer their name in prayer. And what I took out of the universe, I put back into the universe and try to take these principles into the affair with these people and offer them friendship and fellowship. I was able to do stuff like that. Let's go to page 83. It says, the spiritual life is not a theory, we have to live it. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not urge them. We should not talk incessantly about them about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Great piece of information. My behavior will convince them more than my words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness will make a skeptic out of anyone. There may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves we would write them if we could. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter. If I can't make a face-to-face visit, I will try a letter or a phone call. And there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases. But we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile and scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. If we're painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we're halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. I will not regret the past and wish to shut the door on it. My big book tells me that my past can be my greatest asset going to help others. I will comprehend the word serenity, and I will know peace. I will experience peace. Fifth step promises I can be alone in perfect peace and ease, and it reminded me this again. Am I experiencing that yet? Because those fifth step promises materialized for me somewhere between 5 to 9, and certainly by 9 I did. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. I will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in my fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. My whole attitude and outlook upon life will change because of the shift in consciousness, my shift in perceptions. I'm awake. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave me. I will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us because I'm now getting integrated with this power, listening to that quiet voice. What's God's will? We hear that all the time. I don't know what God's will is for me. Well, you know what? I know what it isn't. And so now I need to trust that quiet voice and go with it. I will intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle me. I will suddenly realize that God is doing for me what I can never do for myself. And that is purely through experience of doing this work. It says, are these extravagant promises? We think not. They're being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize, and the condition is if I work for them, to experience by taking a bit in my teeth and going out and do this stuff. I was working with a gentleman sponsoring a guy, and he makes amends to his significant other. And after he makes amends, he insisted that she live our life. It'd be good for her. She put up with him for about 30 years, and now he's telling her it'll be good for you to live this way. And he insisted that she sit in prayer and meditation with him, demanding this way of life for her. Sounds pretty selfish and self-centered so far, right? Well, he sits in meditation, and they begin, and it started out with her sitting opposite him in meditation. He says, when I got up, I heard the TV in the next room. And opened up my eyes, and she wasn't there, and I got up and walked into the next room. She was watching television. And he said, I'm really angry. I got a whole bunch of inventory to write about her. And I said, how could you possibly be angry with this woman when she told you she doesn't want to embrace this way of life? That's something I need to do. I can talk about this way of life to my family, but not expect that they're going to live it because I'm on this path. What I need to do is be patient and tolerant of that stuff and take these principles into that affair. That's part of this amends for me, this living amends. There are amends I had to make about giving back to what my sponsor calls Mother Earth. There was amends I had to make to other religions. My character assassination of other religions. How do I go fix that stuff? I found a way to go do that. Gossip. I know none of us say we gossip, but we gossip. I gossip. I did. My early days in Alcoholics Anonymous, my later days in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I would justify it by, well, there's three of us talking about someone who isn't on the path, so I have a right to gossip. How arrogant is that? Or just in conversation with someone, you know who I heard got drunk, or you know who I heard is doing this, or whatever it may be. Gossip. I'm sitting in with three or four other people who are character assassinating someone else, and I either lovingly don't confront it or walk away, I sit there and listen. I'm just as guilty, aren't I? And I had to address that last time through the work, second time through the work. Well, what do I do if I know you're on my list because I gossiped about you? Well, here was a great lesson I had to do each and every time. Before I come to you, if it presents itself that I come to you and tell you about this stuff, Because there were some times where I had just demonstrated a different character. I had to offer you friendship or fellowship, and if the change is happening, I can do that. But there were times where I had to show up to you and tell you about my bad feelings to you, about my gossiping of you. Before I showed up to you, I had to go search out the people I gossiped about you. I talked to Bill and Frank about Bob. Before I go see Bob, I go clear it up with Bill and Frank first. Then I go see that person. There's no wreckage left behind. Because if you're coming to me about gossiping, maybe I'll ask, well, who'd you gossip about? Who'd you talk to me about? I may ask that question. And if you're unprepared, well, shame on you. And if we're really taking the bit in our teeth and going and do this, it's about being directed here, and we go see those other people. And this is what this has been my journey. You know what? Making amends like that and having a shift in consciousness, I don't really get involved with that stuff anymore. Anyone I sponsor, I really direct them at the damage being done when we gossip about others. All it does is make me better than you when I gossip. Do I really need to be doing that? Maybe I think I'm awake and I'm sound asleep. Carrying a vision of God's will into all my activity. That's what my big book says. And some of these amends, some of this way of living is about really rubber hitting the road here. So most nights when I'm writing nightly review, I'm not saying, oh boy, I gossiped about someone tonight. I don't have that thing in my gut. That was cleared up going through amends, and there was a shift for me where I'm not involved with that stuff anymore. I spoke at great length about this with my sponsor. It's damaging. It's damaging. Assassinating someone's character. I talk too much. It's 9:10, and so what I'd like to do is first thank all of you for listening and throw it out to the floor for some questions or comments. Yes. Well, I've had experience with that. There was a gentleman in Brooklyn. I used to attend the same Friday night meeting with him regularly. And I would see him at other meetings, but same Friday night meeting, he was always there. And I'm going through this work for the first time, and I didn't have very nice things to think about this person. He shared too long, the same old thing. I mean, you name it, I came up with something to assassinate his character. And I gossiped about him. And he was on my list. And so I let God be the final judge in all areas, and I seek counsel first, and I sat with my sponsor. I got some instructions, and I sat prayer and meditation with this. I knew I had to go sit with this guy, but first I had to go to those people that I talked about him with, and I cleared that up first. Friday night, here comes this gentleman. He was coming out of the restroom on the way into the meeting, and I'm coming up the steps, and there he is, and I knew I had to sit with this guy. And I need a moment of your time. And I shared with him what I was doing and what I'm about to do. And I shared with him about how I felt, in as lovingly as I can be and delicate as I can be, and how wrong that was. And I told him how I cleared it up with other people and how I saw him differently now. There was a shift for me. And his reply to me was, Pete, this couldn't come at a better time. God be my witness. He said this could not come at a better time. And he shared to me some of his dramas of life that he was experiencing. It was done perfectly on God's calendar. If I would have saw him a week before, maybe it wouldn't have been embraced the way it was. And that was put aside. And what I did with that gentleman, there was a shift in how I saw this guy. someone who is not on this path and was experiencing untreated alcoholism and really in the grips of untreated alcoholism. The power of amends. A couple of years ago, I am studying for something called a Series 7 exam. Now, you're looking at the worst math student on the planet, and I'm trying to do this deal. Studying 8 hours and trying to learn how to pass this to get this license. And I failed the first time, and I failed the second time, and I failed the third time. Each time I got close, and I missed it by a couple of points the last time. It was a moral victory for me. A guy I'm sponsoring calls me up and says, "How did you do?" And instead of giving the awful score, I lied to him. My ego says, "Don't tell you, you sponsored this guy. He didn't think less of you." And I gave him a fictitious score, like I missed it by a few points. I got off the phone. I said, "What was wrong with that?" And I knew I had to call him back, and I did. And I told him what I did and why I did it. And I made amends for that little moment. You know what he told me? He said, "You know, you're my sponsor, and you just gave so much credibility to what you do and what you talk about in this path." Going into that phone call, he says, "I didn't know what to think, except Father walked me through this one also." We just don't know about the power of amends until we're out there doing it. That guy trusted me more after that than prior to it. Pretty neat. Hi, awesome. Elaborate on people making amends to people who are actively using. Sure. I have a relative, family member. Last I heard, he's still using. But his name came up. This was a few years ago, and I had to make an approach, and he was in the grip of his addiction. My job was to suit up and show up and do the best job God allows me. What if they die? What if I die with unfinished business? Wasn't my job to figure out, well, are they sober enough? Are they not sober? My job was to make an appointment. If they were willing to listen, I was to go do that. How do I know? By showing up while they're in the throes of addiction, by me showing up and demonstrating this big book and the power of God, that there may not be a shift in their consciousness. So what I do immediately is get attached to the outcome. Well, they're drinking. They're using drugs. I can't show up because this is what's going to happen. Can't be attached to the outcome. So my instructions were, and I've done it, like this woman I talked about in Sheepshead Bay, Brooklyn. She was using. I made my approach. A family member made my approach. Okay. That's just my experience.
Before we go, before everybody starts going, I want to announce that we found out yesterday that they're going to be resanding this floor next week. We're almost 99% sure that we're going to get the church across the street. There's a gymnasium there or a cafeteria.
What you can do is, this meeting has a website. It's northjerseyrecovery.com. Go up there by Friday. We'll have on the website where the meeting's going to be, or if it's canceled. If you don't have access to the internet, come up after the meeting. I'll give you my number, and you can call me, and I'll tell you where the meeting's going to be. Or you can give me your number, and I can call you, and whatever you want to do. But somehow we'll get the information out to everyone where the meeting's going to be. Okay? We will have a meeting. We'll just find out where. Anybody else have another question before we go? No? If we don't, I'd like to thank Peter again for a great night. Great night. Stay close.